Her accent sounded a lot like Ty Calizo's, but she didn't have any tribal tattoos on her face. That was still enough for Dom to decide to give her a wide berth. South Islanders were all crazy, and that was by gear standards, which allowed for a lot of crazy even at the best of times. "Anyone gonna introduce us?" Cole held out a massive hand for shaking. She took it. "Private Augustus Cole, ma'am. And the really ugly bastard here is Corporal Damon Baird."
"Bernadette Mataki." She gripped his hand. "Bernie."
Baird just nodded at her, surly and working hard on being unimpressed.
"Marcus and Dom already know me."
"Wow, lady, you got a handshake like a boomer. I like that in a woman."
"You're a cheeky bugger, but you'll do. Come on, Marcus, take me to Hoffman."
Marcus made a faint grunt and jerked his head in the direction of the boulevard. Outside, the King Raven had already sat down, and the winchman gave them an irritated get-a-move-on gesture.
"When you ladies are ready, we've got wounded on board," he said sourly, seeming not to notice Bernie at first. "Just because there's not many..."
"Shit, you are a woman!"
"Hey, don't talk about Baird like that," Cole said. "He's sensitive, being blonde and all."
Baird didn't rise to the bait. Bernie swung herself into the crew cabin and fixed the winchman with a stare, which made sure he didn't say another word. The Raven lifted Claire, and Dom caught a fleeting glance between Marcus and Bernie that bothered him for a moment. It was the kind of look that might have been a question or a warning, or both. "I've known this guy nearly all my life. We've lived in each other's pockets since we were kids. Is there something I don't know?"
"I'm not a woman,"
Bernie said pointedly, resting the ancient long shot across her knees.
"I used to be Sergeant Mataki, and I can still do the job."
"Yeah," said Marcus, staring out into the cityscape beneath. "She did. And she can."
Mataki. Dom found himself trying to erase 5, 10, 15 years from her face without looking as if he was staring. But she caught him looking anyway and didn't seem offended. If anything, she looked sympathetic. But she still didn't look like anyone's gray-haired mother.
"Mataki, Mataki, 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 oh shit, yes!"
Now he knew who she was. It came back with all the force of being shaken awake from a deep sleep. She'd fought at the Battle of Aspo Fields. She'd fought alongside his brother, Carlos. And, like Marcus, she'd been there when he was killed. Dom held out his hand.
"Thanks," he said at last. "Nice shot."
Former Reitman Hospital, barracks block. It was the first half-decent bathroom Bernie had seen in years. The fact that the building had once been a mental asylum for the crazy rich didn't trouble her at all. The rows of wash basins stretched to the far wall, and the tiles were the ones she remembered from every cog base she'd ever been in. The novelty of running water would take some getting used to. She filled a basin, plunged her head in, and savored the simple joy of fresh water before straightening up and focusing on the mirror. There was a bittersweet feel of home about it all. She'd forgotten the smells. Smoke, blood, shit, machine oil, discharged weapons, regulation carbolic soap. They filled the locker room. Marcus stood cleaning locust guts off his armor, looking mildly annoyed. Then he took off the do-rag he always wore and rinsed it in a basin. Without it, he looked like a totally different man.
"God, is that the same one you were wearing last time I saw you?"
Bernie asked.
"No."
He wrung it out, then tied it back on his head without looking in the mirror. "I got a new one when Dom sprung me from jail."
"Yeah, that's what I was meaning to ask you. Aren't you curious about why I was trailing you? I've been shadowing patrols for weeks."
He shrugged.
"Okay, why?"
"To make sure you weren't with the Stranded. I heard some weird shit about you when I got here, Marcus. Is it true?
Depends what you heard.
That you deserted your post, cost a lot of lives, that they court-martialed you.
Marcus shrugged. Can't argue with that.
Not you, never.
True. I got 40 years, served 4. It was going to be a death sentence, but Dom spoke up for me, and got me out a few days ago.
That was Dom all over. The man would die in the proverbial ditch for anyone he believed in. But Bernie couldn't imagine Marcus Phoenix running away from a battle. There had to be more to it than that, a lot more.
You ever gonna tell me what really happened?
Maybe. Are you going to tell me why you decided to come back now?
There was an unspoken question in there. She'd put it out of her head so many years ago, deliberately, carefully, that for a moment she thought she really had forgotten what it had all been about. But it only took a glance at Dom Santiago's face to remind her. He was a good lad, dog-loyal and humblingly brave, the spitting image of his brother right down to the neat black goatee beard. She'd found it hard to look him in the eye.
"Don't worry, Marcus," she said. "I'm not going to dredge up Asfo again."
No, Dom didn't need to know the details about Carlos then, and he didn't need to know them now.
"We agreed, didn't we? It's been 16 years.
He's lost both his kids, and his wife's been missing for 10 years.
Everyone had lost someone since E-Day, but that still sounded like too much for one man to take on top of losing his brother.
I bet he's still looking for her.
Yeah? You know Dom.
What about his folks?
Missing, presumed dead.
Poor sod. I thought he'd remember me better.
Just as well he didn't. He'd only start asking her questions.
Is your dad still around?
No.
Sorry.
You've been out of the loop a long time.
You bet. I went back home when I was invalided out of the army. The island was totally cut off on E-Day, so it was 8 years before I even heard about the recall to Ephira.
Marcus looked blank for a moment, as if he was calculating.
Is there any good news out there?
The global communications network they'd all grown up with had collapsed, most of it within days of the first locust emergence.
I came across a few survivors from time to time, usually in fishing villages. Harder for locusts to get at them when they put to sea.
That's one way of avoiding them.
I had a hell of a job getting hold of a boat, but there's a lot you can persuade people to do if you've got a rifle.
Marcus looked Bernie over with a wary eye.
You're serious, then?
I'm too old for breeding stock, but I can still fight. Don't tell me I can't hack it.
Wouldn't dream of it.
Bernie knew that as long as she could hold a weapon, she had a duty. Any civvies who stood in her way were a threat to everyone's survival. There was no room for neutrality or going it alone, no choice of sides to be on, and she'd lost too many people she cared about.
But everyone's lost someone. Every human, our whole species, is in mourning.
What's that going to do to us? What kind of society is going to come out of this?
What are we going to be like after so much loss?
Thinking that far ahead was a luxury nobody had, except maybe the politicians. But she thought it anyway. Marcus continued cleaning up, and Bernie tried the showers. Even with cold water, it was sheer luxury. She was never going to set foot in a bloody boat again. The main door swung open. She heard Dom's voice as she was getting dressed.
"Hoffman's on his way," he said. "Anya says it was like someone shoved a firecracker up his ass. Just said shit and took off." "Anya said that, did she?" Bernie called. "Never knew she learned that kind of language."
"Sorry, didn't realize you were there, Sergeant."
"I'm still a civvy until Hoffman says otherwise."
Bernie waited a couple of seconds before coming out of the shower area. The last time she'd seen Dom Santiago before today, he was crying unashamedly for his dead brother, and the victory at Asfo Fields meant nothing. 6 months after that, she was stuck in a hospital bed with a shattered leg, and then she was out of the army for good. It was too easy to lose touch with people. And then you found the people had gone forever. She wanted to kill grubs, to wipe them out like they wiped out her world, and being a gear gave her the best seat in the house to do that. "I remember you now," Dom said, looking a little guilty. "It's been a long time."
"It's okay. It wasn't like I was in the same company."
"You were in Carlos's, though." "It's a normal comment. Don't start blurting stuff out. What else did you expect him to say?"
"Yes," she said. "Good man, your brother. A bloody fine gear."
That was all it took. Neutral, honest, inviting no questions. Carlos was a brother anyone could be proud of. Dom just smiled to himself for a moment, a little sadly, and started singing under his breath while he took off his body armor. Fighting Locust was a messy business. Bernie thought of the chainsaw bayonet and realized that stripping down and cleaning a rifle was a whole new game these days. Marcus was using an old toothbrush on the blades. He'd disassembled the whole chainsaw feed and was digging out connective tissue that had wound itself around the chain.
"So is Hoffman mellowed?" Bernie asked.
Marcus made that sound under his breath. Bernie recalled it all too well. It wasn't actually a sigh, it was just an escape of disappointment, disgust, and disillusionment that he was too tired to hold in any longer.
"No, he's still the asshole he always was. But he's top asshole now."
Dom, out of Marcus's eyeline, gave Bernie a meaningful glance. Long story, don't go there. But she didn't recall Marcus ever having that much to say. She took that as a guide to just how bad the blood was between him and Hoffman.
"Okay," she said carefully. "I'll try to stay on his least offensive side."
Marcus went on cleaning his kit. Bernie gathered her belongings, one change of clothes, three changes of weapon, and sat in the lobby area waiting to be summoned. Things had changed a lot since she'd left the service. The gears walking past her were all men, and they looked wrung out in a way that the guys she'd served with never had, however bad things had been. The pendulum wars were different somehow. After the best part of 80 years fighting, a kind of saturation level had been reached. Nobody really believed it was the end of the world, even if global disaster was actually around the corner. This time, though, it was probable, and everyone knew it. Maybe she'd just come 8,000 miles to die somewhere worse than home. "Well, at least I'll die with a square meal inside me and a decent pair of boots, and take a few more of the grub bastards with me."
"I know I said I'd take anything I could get that could hold a rifle, but you're pushing my limits, Mataki."
The voice boomed from behind her. Passing gears stopped to stare for a second and then wisely went about their business. No, Hoffman hadn't changed much at all. Solid, short, square, lips set in a thin line. She stood to attention and turned as if the last 16 years had closed up without a single day's gap. Actually, he had changed. His age showed, more around his neck than anything, and his piercing dark eyes looked somehow faded. But he still stood as if he was going to take a run at her, arms loose at his sides, weight slightly forward.
"Sir," she said, "you look like shit."
Hoffman wavered on the edge of a smile. She knew he wouldn't dare grin and look happy to see her again.
"Good to see you too, Bernie. You're not exactly combat fit yourself."
"I know, but I can still function in full armor and hit a moving target at 800 meters. That's how I got here."
"Take the oath, then go see the quartermaster."
Hoffman surrendered to a faint smile, but it was brief and almost embarrassed.
"Welcome back. Then remember not to kiss Phoenix's ass, because if I had my way, he'd still be the last man left in the slab."
"Arse, sir," Bernie said.
She didn't understand the reference to the prison, the slab.
"They're arses, where I come from."
"Well, whatever it is, don't pucker up to it."
Hoffman turned and strode off. There was no point telling Marcus that she'd always liked Hoffman, and that he was a proper soldier, not a useless chair-warming tosser like some she'd known. And there was no point telling Hoffman that Marcus didn't have it in him to abandon his men, and that there would have been an unselfish reason for anything he did, however stupid the decision. She wasn't here to referee a grudge match between the two of them. She was here, she reminded herself, because she was human, and being a gear again was the best chance she had of taking back her world. Dom walked up to her, reeking of carbolic soap. It was bloody hard to scrape off that locust smell.
"Come on, I'll take you to the adjutant's office," he said. "You need anything, you got any problems, you just let me know.
Carlos thought a lot of you."
"Thanks. You're a good lad, Dom. Tell me some stories about him sometime, will you? I bet you two got up to all kinds of shit he never told me about."
Dom grinned. Bernie did her best to smile back and followed him down the corridor. She'd tell him what she could, but she knew right then that sooner or later he'd ask her to recount the story she swore she'd never tell. He'd ask about the day Carlos died. Ops Center, Reitman Hospital, Jacinto. The reports of locust incursion always came in thick and fast, but they'd slowed to a comparative trickle in the last couple of days. That didn't mean they'd stopped.
"Sir, we've got a problem."
Lieutenant Matheson got Hoffman's attention by shoving a printout in front of him. The kid was stuck in CIC after losing both legs.
"Look at this chart. Look at the direction the new incursions are moving in."
Hoffman scanned the line of short arrows formed like a figure four and the times written against them. Yes, there was a definite progression. Locusts were moving north in an area they hadn't reached before, cutting between the outlying stranded settlements and what was euphemistically called farmland. It was still shown as an optimistic green on charts. The reality wasn't anywhere near as rural. There were few crops grown in the open air, but plenty of industrially ugly hangars full of hydroponics, mycoprotein farms, and poultry units. A lone city of humans still took a lot of feeding. The incursions weren't advanced enough to form a definite pattern, though. Not yet. By the time they are, though, it'll be too late.
"What's your take on it, then, Matheson?"
"It might just be coincidence, but if you extend that line, well, you can see where they're heading."
"If those things cut off the food production areas, we're screwed," Hoffman said. "The geologists swore that that was solid granite bedrock."
"It might have been the light mass bomb."
"What, opening new fissures?"
"Shove that much energy into confined spaces, and it's got to go somewhere, sir."
The ops room, a shadow of the lavishly manned center it had been in early years, had fallen silent except for the occasional radio transmissions from gears in the field and the rhythmic grass-cutter sound of printers spewing out updates. When Hoffman looked up, all eyes were on him. Young men too disabled for active service, reserve gears too old to deploy, and women from 18 to don't ask. It wasn't the uniform that made them look alike at that moment. It was the blank dread in their eyes.
"Give me a straight battle. Shoot, don't shoot. Advance, fall back. But every time I do this, every time feels like I'm going to balls it up and let the whole damn world down."
Without food supplies, the city wouldn't last more than a few months, at best. Securing water pipelines was hard enough. The locust looked like they'd seized the opportunity to start a siege.
"They're going to try to starve us out, aren't they, sir?"
said one of the retired men.
"You're old enough to remember Anvil Gate," Hoffman said, "so you know how I deal with sieges."
It had been the defining moment of Hoffman's career. He was no longer sure whether it defined him for good or ill, but it wasn't something he wanted to do again.
"Get me the chairman."
Prescott, to his credit, was always available, day or night, and Hoffman cut him extra slack for that. He called back within a minute. Every back in the ops room was turned as officers returned to their duties, but Hoffman knew everyone was listening intently.
"What's the problem, Colonel?"
Matheson passed an updated printout to Hoffman in silence. Another four-shaped mark indicated where more locusts had broken through.
"Looks like the grubs have a new strategy. They're cutting us off from the North Gate food production zone."
"What kind of numbers?"
"Numbers don't matter if they concentrate what they've got on creating a no-go area there. We've got two options, counterattack or start clearing that sector."
"So what are you recommending?"
It wasn't a military option, but Hoffman couldn't guarantee saving the zone nor the food stockpiles there. They'd had years of practice at evacuating populations and withdrawing into secured areas as the locust advanced across Tyrus.
"Clear the area, Chairman. At the rate they're moving, we've got 3 days to shut down production and move everything out. Not many people to shift, but a lot of equipment and stores."
Prescott sounded as if he was counting under his breath.
"That means we need to ship people in to do the heavy lifting."
"We'll take in an escorted convoy and bring it back, but we've got to move fast."
"Okay. I'll put the emergency management unit on this as top priority, and they'll get back to you with the details inside the hour. How many gears can you spare?"
"Not as many as I'd like," Hoffman said. "But the faster we do this, the sooner they get back to combat duties."
"Keep me in the loop, Colonel,"
Prescott said, and the line went dead.
"Okay, people."
Hoffman slapped his hands together to get attention, as if he needed to. He could have heard a rat fart in the silence.
"Dust off the contingency plan. You know your jobs. As soon as we get the vehicle numbers, plan me a route in and out. Put times on it and tell me how many assets we need to reallocate. Matheson, put 3 squads on standby."
"Very good, sir."
It sounded fine. Hoffman could stand outside himself sometimes and listen to his own performance, because command was almost as much about presentation as soldiering. Gears, and civilians, needed to see decisive strength when the shit was on an intercept course with the fan. He just couldn't convince himself half as well as he convinced them. "I didn't earn this position. I just didn't manage to get killed." Earned or not, though, he held it, and there was nobody else suitable to hand it to. It was his duty. He'd do it. And he'd pray that he didn't screw up humanity's last chance. Chapter 3.
"The cog isn't a soul-crushing machine, dumbass. It's society. Mutual support, mutual dependence. Individuality might sound all noble and free, but it generally means crapping on your neighbors. And if you crap on your neighbors, don't expect them to help you. Rules hold humans together, and it's together or die."
Private Dom Santiago, explaining to a former stranded why he should stop whining about being drafted as part of Operation Lifeboat. 26 years earlier, Olufsen Intermediate School, Ephira, 12 BE. He was a rich kid, he was different, and he was new. Carlos Santiago felt really, really sorry for Marcus Phoenix. He took refuge at a desk without looking around, as if not meeting anyone's eye would stop him from being noticed. He didn't look rich, no fancy clothes, just a school uniform like everyone else's. But everyone knew who his dad was and where he lived.
He was also tall and skinny, very pale, with spooky light blue eyes that didn't go with his black hair. He might as well have stuck a target roundel on his back. The math teacher, Major Fuller, was as old-fashioned as the school building and ran classes as if he was still in the army. He even had one of those short, brass-topped sticks like the sergeants who drilled gears for parades. Every man in the Santiago family had served in the military, so Carlos knew all about that kind of thing. But the army was everywhere, part of life itself, and especially at school. This, Carlos's dad said, was where the military ethos made a man of you. Carlos had to look up the word.
"Introduce yourself, boy," Fuller said.
Marcus stood up at his desk and didn't look around.
"Marcus Phoenix."
"Age, parents, siblings?"
"I'm 10 years old. My parents are Professor Adam Phoenix and Dr. Elaine Phoenix. I'm an only child."
Oh, Phoenix was dead for sure. Carlos's heart sank a little farther. Marcus didn't even talk like the rest of them. He had a posh accent. He was going to get creamed. Fuller looked as if he was waiting for Marcus to go on, but there was a tense, empty silence, and Fuller gave up.
"Class, you will make him feel part of the team," he said stiffly in his major's voice, "and you will treat him with courtesy. You will not behave like street ruffians. You will behave like citizens. Are we clear?"
The response was a mumbling chorus. "Yes, Major Fuller." Joshua Curzon raised his hand.
"Sir, if he's rich, why is he here?"
"You think this is a poor school?"
"Well, we're all poor."
Fuller brought his stick down on the lectern with a crack like rifle fire.
"Phoenix is here because society is formed from people pulling together, not breaking away into separate groups. Unity. Because no man can exist on his own. No country can either. That's why we have the Coalition of Ordered Governments."
Fuller repeated this speech so often that Carlos could recite it, and maybe that was the point. It made perfect sense when he stopped to think about it.
"If you look after your neighbor will look after you. Previous generations left a rich world for you, so you'll leave a rich world for those to come. Nobody who stands on the sidelines and thinks only of his own needs can ever be a man."
Yeah, that made sense, too. But Carlos understood all that, so he was more interested now in finding out how much stuff Marcus had and how big his room was. He probably had a whole wing of a mansion to himself. The Phoenix estate was huge. Carlos had run around the perimeter once with Dom, thinking of shinning over the walls and seeing what the gardens were like, but he never dared. Getting Dom into trouble would make Mom go crazy. He was supposed to look out for his little brother and set a good example. The estate looked like a prison, anyway.
"Open your books," Fuller said. "Curzon, seeing as you're so interested in financial statistics, you can tell us what you learned yesterday about calculating averages."
Carlos counted down the hours until lunch recess, watching dust motes circling in the shafts of sunlight from windows set high in the wood-paneled walls. The room smelled of permanence and wax polish. This building was hundreds of years old, and it would be here for hundreds more, war or no war. His grandfather could remember when the Pendulum Wars began, but Carlos couldn't. All in all, the war didn't seem as bad as people said. Life went on. Besides, the real war was here, in Olufsen Intermediate. At lunch, Carlos kept an eye on Marcus, just in case. Nobody sat next to him at the long refectory table. They just watched him. He never said a word. Eventually, Carlos couldn't stand it any longer and picked up his plate and moved to sit beside him.
"I'm Carlos Santiago," he said. "What's behind the wall around your house? The wall on All Fathers Avenue?" "Orchard," Marcus said, not meeting his eyes.
"Cool." Carlos nodded approvingly.
"Where did you go to school before?"
"Private tutor."
That explained a lot.
"This place isn't so bad. Hey, I saw your dad on the news once. He's famous. A scientist."
Marcus turned and looked at Carlos.
He always says he's an engineer, and my mother's the scientist. He used to be a gear. My dad was a gear. So was my granddad, and my uncles, and Aunt Rosa. I'll be one, too.
You decided already?
It's great. Like a family, really.
Marcus appeared to chew that over for a while. Maybe the cog officers, like his dad, he'd have been an officer, not an ordinary gear, didn't see it that way. Carlos stuck with Marcus through lunch, reluctant to give the others a chance to torment him. It would happen, but it would be over fast, one way or another. Carlos had a feeling Marcus was going to have a harder time of it than anyone else. He wasn't very chatty. Carlos wondered if Marcus just didn't like him, but it seemed more like he didn't know what to do or say. Joshua Curzon and his brother Roland, a year older, shoved into Carlos's path as they filed into the main building.
"So he thinks he's too good for us."
That could have meant Carlos or Marcus or both. Carlos knew he could handle himself in a fight, so he decided to set Joshua straight from the start. He found himself pitching in to defend Marcus immediately, just like he did for Dom.
"He's okay. Leave him alone."
"You're sucking up to him because he's rich," Joshua sneered.
"Snob. You're an ass-kissing snob, Santiago."
"And you're a moron. Leave him alone." Carlos had thrown down the gauntlet. Joshua accepted the challenge.
"Take that back."
"Shove it."
"Yeah?"
"Yeah." Carlos pushed past him, but it wasn't over yet. He knew that. The last hour of the afternoon was usually spent playing thrash ball. Carlos suspected it was because the teaching staff wanted to take it easy before they clocked off, but it was also handy for settling any arguments that cropped up during the day. Carlos made sure Marcus was on his team to avoid leaving him waiting to be picked. Joshua fixed Carlos with that "you're dead" stare. It didn't take long before Joshua made a lunge for the ball in the penalty area and brought his elbow down hard into Carlos's back. Carlos waited for the games master's line of sight to be interrupted and brought his boot down hard on Joshua's instep, forcing a howl out of him.
"Yeah, that hurts, doesn't it?"
"Stop whining, Curzon." The games master waved play on. Maybe he thought it was all part of toughening them up anyway. "Or I'll transfer you to the girls' class."
Marcus moved in to cover Carlos. He didn't look the athletic type, but he was tall, and he intercepted a pass easily. It seemed to surprise him that he'd caught it. He paused for a second. Joshua tackled him with a lot more force than needed, and Marcus fell headlong. He jumped to his feet, looking more embarrassed than hurt, but Carlos wasn't going to let that go. Carlos caught up to Joshua as they left the field, out of sight of the games master.
"I said leave him alone." "Oh, I forgot. You're his best friend."
"It's his first day. Give him a break." It should have ended there, but it wouldn't, of course. Marcus sat down next to Carlos on the changing room bench. They were the last two there.
"Don't worry about me," Marcus said. "I'll be okay."
"But it's not fair."
Marcus shrugged. He didn't seem to be giving in. It was more like he didn't care.
"I better get home."
Carlos stopped short of saying he'd see him out safely, in case he thought he was treating him like a little kid. It was hard to explain why he felt responsible for Marcus, but he did, and now that he'd taken on that job, dropping it after a few hours felt cowardly and plain wrong. He left first, anyway, just to make sure the coast was clear. It wasn't. In the shade of the portico outside, Joshua and Roland Curzon waited, hands thrust into pockets, with one of their buddies. Carlos straightened up and stood his ground.
"You think you're really hard, don't you, Santiago?" Joshua said.
He let his arms hang at his sides. Carlos knew what was coming.
"You're always taking over and telling us what to do."
"And what are you going to do about it?"
"This,"
Joshua said, like he'd heard the line in a movie, and swung a punch.
Carlos was ready for it, but it still hurt, and it was loud. He tasted blood in his mouth right away. The crack of bone on bone made his ears ring. He lashed out automatically, just following his fists, and as he was pummeling Joshua anywhere he could reach, he felt someone behind him.
"I can't take two of them, can I? Mom's gonna kill me. I come home in a mess again."
But Roland hadn't jumped him, or the other guy, who didn't seem to be joining in anyway. An unfamiliar hand reached out, grabbed Joshua by the collar, and slammed him sideways onto the ground. It was Marcus. Roland Curzon pitched in to defend his kid brother, landing a punch on Marcus just above the eye, and Carlos froze for a split second while he decided whether to go for Roland or pin Joshua down. But he definitely got Marcus Phoenix all wrong. Marcus came back at Roland with a single punch to the face, aimed like he meant it, like a boxer, and Carlos heard his grunt of effort. Roland staggered back. There was an awful silence for a moment before Roland straightened up, blood running from his nose, eyes glazed with tears, and Joshua got to his feet. Their buddy was still rooted to the spot. That wasn't how kids here fought. It just wasn't. Carlos had never seen anyone punch like that, except grown-ups. Marcus looked completely calm, like nothing had happened. But his hand must have hurt.
"Stay away from me," he said quietly. "And stay away from Carlos, or I'll do it again."
And it was all over, as fast as it started. The Curzons beat a retreat with their useless buddy, and Carlos was left staring at Marcus, scared by the way he'd just punched. He didn't look strong enough to hit anyone like that. Marcus examined his hand, then felt gingerly above his eye.
"Is there a mark?" he asked. "I don't want Dad to start worrying again."
"Nothing yet," Carlos said, wanting to tell him he was really impressed, but not sure how he'd react. "Tell him it was thrash ball."
Why would his dad be worried again?
Ah, maybe Marcus had been kicked out of school for fighting, and that was why he was taught at home.
"Why aren't you at the military academy? Your dad could buy the place." "He wants me to mix with people."
"What, common people like me and Dom?"
"I didn't mean it like that. I'm just on my own a lot."
"You would be in that big house. Did he teach you how to punch?" It seemed an obvious question. Carlos's dad had taught him how to look after himself, how to form a fist that wouldn't get his fingers broken, how to stay out of trouble unless he had no choice.
"I mean, that was hard." "No, he didn't."
Marcus sounded forlorn.
"Anyway, thanks."
"Hey, you did okay. You backed me up. That's what real friends do." Marcus had stood up for someone who stood up for him, which Carlos felt was the best thing anyone could do. He wasn't afraid of getting hurt, and he didn't think he was special or that Carlos was beneath him. Carlos hoped Marcus understood he could rely on him, too. Maybe he'd have to tell him that. Marcus came from a different world, and it wasn't going to be easy to work out what he thought about anything. Marcus just blinked a few times, as if the word friend didn't make any sense.
"Who's Dom?" he asked at last.
"Dominic, my kid brother. He's 8, but he's okay."
"Must be nice to have a brother."
Carlos felt instantly sorry for him. "Hey, you can borrow him when you're fed up."
"Thanks."
Maybe Marcus would have forgotten all about it by the morning, or by next week when he'd settled in more. Marcus didn't forget, though. He seemed more at ease when he came into class the next day. He had a big bruise over his eye, and he was still quiet, but he acted as if he had a right to be there and didn't have to apologize for being different. The Curzons heeded the warning and left both of them alone. Nobody ever needed reminding not to mess with Santiago and Phoenix again. 3 years later, Carlos Santiago's house.
"I swear, that boy grows every time I look away."
Eva Santiago set the table, pausing a couple of times to look out the window onto the yard. I can't believe he's the same kid. Dom was torn between helping his mother get lunch on the table and hanging out with his dad, Carlos, and Marcus while they dismantled an old engine. Yeah, Marcus had changed a lot in the 3 years since he'd started hanging out with Carlos. He wasn't skinny anymore, he didn't talk the same way, and there were times when he even laughed. He was actually bigger than Carlos now, as tall as Major Fuller. He was 13, but to Dom he seemed like a grown-up already.
"He likes your cooking," Dom said. "You're the best cook in the world."
His mother ruffled his hair.
"What are his folks like?"
Dom shrugged. Visits to the Phoenix estate—he always thought of it in grand capital letters—weren't like going to a friend's house. That Marcus's parents weren't folks. The place was enormous, full of expensive antique stuff, that it felt like nobody lived there. Carlos made Dom promise not to knock anything over every time they visited. That wasn't often.
"They're nice," Dom said. "But I don't think they know much about Marcus." "What makes you say that, sweetheart?" "They don't treat him like you treat us."
Mom put on her "I'm trying not to worry you" expression.
"Are they mean to him?" "No, they just don't seem like they're trying to work out who he is. And he's different when he's at home. His voice changes, you know, all posh."
She started to smile, but it was one of those sad ones Dom didn't quite understand.
"You're very smart about people, Dom. I think Marcus gets lonely, and I'm proud of you and Carlos for being there for him."
Dom lined up the knives and forks, then stood back to admire his handiwork before getting the nod from Mom to go out in the yard. He wasn't just keen to join in the tinkering on the engine. He was curious about new neighbors who'd moved in 2 doors away, and whose daughter climbed the trees in their yard faster than anyone he knew. He thought her name was Maria, but he hadn't plucked up the courage to talk to her yet. He was working on it. He kept looking up toward the tree, but there was no sign of her today. Eventually, Mom called everyone in to clean up and eat. She really was a great cook. Marcus always had second helpings and even thirds, probably because it was nothing like the food he had at home, and treated it all like a rare delicacy he'd never taste again. Mom seemed delighted that he cleared his plate without fail. Dad was impressed by his capacity for hot sauce.
"You can eat anything with hot sauce," Dad said, ladling more rice onto Marcus's plate. "When I was a gear, we always made sure we had some in our rations, because food sometimes wasn't so good, you know. Good dose of hot sauce, problem solved."
Mom laughed.
"Ed, you don't need to solve my food, do you?"
"Course not, honey. I just love hot sauce."
"Would you re-enlist, Mr. Santiago?"
Marcus asked.
"You sound like you missed the service."
"Yeah, I would. Best times, best friends I ever had. Taught me a trade, too. But I've got a good job, and I'm not a kid anymore, so..."
There was a magic in the army. Dom saw how it lit up his father's face every time. He told great stories about the things his squad got up to, and even when he recalled friends who got killed, and his eyes brimmed, it still sounded like he wouldn't have missed a second of it. It was a world of its own. It all sounded so vivid, like the only place you could be truly alive, even if you didn't know if you'd get killed the next day.
"You've done your service."
Mom didn't approve. It was written all over her face.
"You don't have to apologize for leaving. The country's got to keep going, and keeping transport running is as important as fighting."
Dad smiled, but didn't look as if he believed that.
"You ever thought about the military, Marcus?" Dad asked.
Marcus paused.
"I have, sir."
Carlos cut in, as if he didn't want Marcus to continue. "Well, I'm going to enlist as soon as I'm 18, 16 even."
"You're not dropping out of school early," Mom said firmly. "You're staying on until you're 18.
You might get drafted anyway if the war gets worse. I don't need to be drafted. Carlos was talking about it all as if it would happen tomorrow. But it was 5 years away. That was forever. Dom couldn't imagine what 5 years in the future would even look like. I want to do it. Marcus didn't say anything, but however hard it usually was to work out what he was feeling, it looked pretty clear from the short-lived frown as he busied himself with his fork. Dom didn't feel he could join in this conversation. It was going on over his head, suddenly very grown up and worrying. But one thing was clear. Carlos would join the army, and Dom would be alone. So would Marcus. That was the look on his face. He had to go to college because his father wanted him to be an engineer, a scientist kind of engineer, not a mechanic like Eduardo Santiago. He and Carlos would be split up, and Dom could see that the realization upset him. The two of them were inseparable. That was the word his mother used. Inseparable. No. We're like brothers. It's worse than that.
You don't have to think about any of that for a long time, Dad said. You're still boys. Enjoy being kids while you can.
Changing the subject lifted the mood a little. But now Dom began to see the war not as something that went on in the background without touching his life, but as a real threat to everything that made him happy. He'd be just 16 when Carlos signed up, and Mom had made it clear that she wanted them to finish school. The idea ate at him for the rest of the day. After lunch, they went back into the yard to reassemble the engine. Dom tried to stop thinking about the war in the army, but not even wondering when Maria was going to show up could put it out of his mind. It took something pretty bad to do that. Mom came out to the back door, looking wide-eyed as if something had shocked her. "Marcus," she called. "Marcus, sweetheart, come here, will you? Your father needs to talk to you. It's important." Marcus froze. His parents never called here, so this was serious. Was he in trouble over something? No, Marcus never put a foot wrong. He laid down his tools and went into the house to take the call, and Carlos went to follow him, but Mom put her hand on his arm to stop him. "Be there for him later," she said quietly. "He's going to be upset. I'll stay with him until his father collects him." She beckoned to Dad, and they went into the house. "What is it?" Dom asked. "I don't know." Carlos walked up to the back door, but didn't go beyond the step. He tried to listen, then shook his head. "I can't hear anything. It must be really bad, whatever it is." Marcus didn't come out again. A little while later, Dom heard a vehicle pull up at the front, and then Mom and Dad came back out into the yard. "It's his mother," Mom said. "She's missing. His father said she didn't come back from work." "Missing? Like kidnapped?" Carlos said. "Murdered?" Dad shook his head.
"People go missing for all kinds of reasons, son. They usually show up again. It's probably going to be okay. But let's be really careful what we say to Marcus. It's going to be hard for him until she comes back."
Dom followed Carlos's lead and said nothing. His first thought wasn't that she'd been kidnapped, but that she was like Mrs. Garcia in the next street, who walked out because she didn't like her husband anymore. She left her kids behind, too. Sometimes mothers did that. Carlos gave up on the engine and went to his room. Dom gave him 5 minutes, and then followed him. "When are we going to see Marcus again, then?"
"I'll call him later," Carlos said. He looked scared.
"He's got to go to class, too." "What if she's not just run away and she's dead?"
"Then we'll take care of him," Carlos said. "That's what friends do. That's what brothers do."
Mrs. Phoenix didn't show up the next day or the next week. Marcus, being Marcus, turned up for class after a day's absence, and never said a word about it. Carlos waited patiently for him to say something, and made Dom promise not to ask him before he was ready to talk. The three of them sat on the steps of the quadrangle after lunch, textbooks open on their knees, silent.
"She isn't coming back," Marcus said suddenly.
"How do you know?" Carlos asked.
"Dad won't tell me where she was supposed to be."
"What does that mean?" said Dom.
Marcus stared at his hands. "You've seen movies. If someone goes missing, you retrace their steps. I wanted to know where she was supposed to be, but Dad wouldn't tell me.
Why would he do that?"
"Because he must know where she went, and he thinks I'd be more upset if I knew."
It was a long explanation by Marcus's standards.
"So maybe she just left. Maybe something upset her."
He didn't have to say he was worried the something was him. Dom could see it on his face. Marcus's relationship with his parents wasn't as easygoing as the Santiago's, but Dom still thought it was weird to think it was his own fault if his mom really had walked out. Dom was about to say that it was probably his father's fault, like with Mrs. Garcia, but Carlos stopped him before he even opened his mouth.
"I don't think she'd really run away, Marcus," Carlos said.
"Are the police looking for her?"
"Dad reported her missing, so they must be."
Mrs. Phoenix stayed missing, and by Marcus's 14th birthday, 4 months later, they still hadn't found her. Marcus didn't talk about her again. He spent much more time with Dom and Carlos, though, as if he didn't want to go home at all. Mom and Dad let him stay as long as he wanted, every day, but Dom heard them talking sometimes in the kitchen late at night about what a rotten shame it was that the boy was so hurt that he didn't want to be with his own father. They didn't seem to talk things through, the Phoenix family. But that was okay. Marcus had the Santiagos, and they had plenty enough time and talking for one more brother. Chapter 4. Despite her mother's warnings and the calls of her friends, Romilly left the safe company of her friends and walked deep into the perils of the forest. She thought they would admire her independence and respect her brave willingness to break ranks with the others, but she did not walk alone. The six-legged demon that had waited patiently beneath her house since her birth followed her unseen, and joined the rest of his kind who rose from the depths to embrace her. Ancient Tyran fairy tale on the popular and improving theme of monsters lying in wait for disobedient children. Reitman Hospital Assembly Area, Jacinto, 14 A.E., 2 days to deadline.
"I didn't sign up to deliver groceries."
Baird ambled down the long line of waiting trucks, pausing occasionally to kick a tire.
"I do grubs. Killing grubs. Shit, what's up with Hoffman? Is he getting senile or what?"
"There are groceries, too." Cole goaded him gently.
A couple of King Ravens circled overhead, returning from dropping a team of sappers at the North Gate food facility.
"Maybe you prefer dog meat, baby, but I'm ready for some steak."
"Dogs are more useful alive,"
Bernie said, leaning against the running board of the nearest truck.
"I survived on cat for a while, though. Not bad. Makes good gloves and boot liners, too."
Dom wondered how long Baird would hold out against the newly formed Cole and Bernie tag team. Baird was busy pretending he wasn't listening to the ribbing.
"Why can't they airlift the stuff?" he said. "This is just asking for it."
"Because we don't have enough spare ravens," Dom said patiently. "Come on, Marcus, where the hell are you?"
"Some of it has to go by road."
There were various ways of coping with Baird. Marcus blanked him out. Cole matched his griping point for point with noisy cheerfulness. And Dom... Dom realized that he handled Baird almost the same way he handled his son, Benedicto. 4-year-olds always asked why. Over the years, Dom had grown used to a level of pain that might have passed for getting over losing his kids, but occasionally there was an unexpected spike of grief that was as searingly raw as the day they died. Benny would have been 18 now, Sylvia 17. Dom could have been a grandfather way too young. And Benny could have been a gear himself by now. You've got to stop this. You know where it always ends. Cole provided a loud distraction right on cue.
So, you got any good cat recipes, Boomer Lady?
Bernie just winked.
I'm not joking, mate.
Tabby bootliners.
You're shitting me.
See for yourself.
Cole squatted down to look as Bernie unclipped the straps at the top of her boots and folded down the fabric. Dom, who had seen some pretty stomach-churning and uncivilized things over the years, found himself staring with horrified fascination. It was tabby fur, all right. Silver tabby.
Shit! Poor little Fluffy!
Cole burst into loud guffaws and slapped his hands on his thighs.
Hey, Damon, you want a pair of these two? Maybe we can get you a nice ginger Tom.
Baird just walked up to Bernie and looked down.
Yeah, real classy, he said. I'll pass.
But you old folk need to keep warm. We don't want you getting hypothermic in the middle of a mission.
Dom waited for Bernie to punch the crap out of Baird, but there was no crunch of bone. She just stood there, half smiling at him, unblinking, and he was the one who looked away first. It was only a matter of time before he went too far with her. Baird always had to test everyone's limits until something broke or everyone got bored.
"Everyone up to speed with SOPs?" Bernie asked. "Long time since we did this in training."
"It's a waste of time," Baird said. "It'd take 30,000 tons of food to feed the city for a month. We can't haul anything like that. Maybe 10-15%. You seriously think that's going to make much difference in the long run?"
"So you can count."
Marcus's voice penetrated the rumble of engines.
"Joined up writing can't be far behind."
Marcus appeared from behind a gun truck with Frederick Rojas, Jan Rojas's brother. He'd stepped straight into the gap left by his dead brother. Dom wasn't sure what to say, because "I know how you feel" didn't quite cut it. Dom had lost a brother, yes, but Frederick had now lost two.
"Shit! How bad must things be when a family is getting wiped out and I've lost count? Even in the Pendulum Wars, that would have been news, real tragic stuff. Now, it's routine."
But Baird didn't let the rebuke, or the need to acknowledge Rojas, stand in the way of his demolition of the idea.
"Leave 'em to it, that's what I say. Fewer mouths to feed, balances out."
Marcus let out a long, weary breath.
"Do you remember any of the values of the Octus Cannon?"
"Sure he does," Cole said, still admiring Bernie's feline accessories.
Dom found himself having an inner debate about why he would happily eat one animal and not another.
"They all start with Damon's ass comes first."
"We're shifting renewables and irreplaceables," Marcus said. "Seed, poultry hydroponics kit, the myco fermenters. That's worth saving."
Myco was the staple protein now that livestock farming was almost non-existent, and Dom actually liked it. It had to be better than cat. It also had the massive advantage that it could be grown in factory conditions because it was a fungus. These days, every secured section of Ephira was expected to be an urban farm, with citizens ordered to grow whatever they could on windowsills or in backyards. Flower beds and parks had been turned into vegetable plots. Dom had heard that one guy kept pigs in his apartment and took them for walks at night. The more the locust encroached on habitable areas, the harder it got to feed the population. There were only so many people you could support in a limited space. Dom didn't fancy dealing with food riots again.
"What are we waiting for, anyway?" he asked.
Marcus checked his armor system, activating lights and power packs.
"That," he said, nodding vaguely in the direction of the perimeter.
A black speck grew larger against the backdrop of cloud, then resolved into a familiar shape. The last of the returning King Ravens dropped down into the compound, kicking up clouds of dust. Hoffman jumped out of the crew bay and strode over to the convoy, followed by a gear with a distinctive haircut. Bernie chuckled.
Shit. I hope Hoffman's not...